Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net. We'll go be
models now. 720 WGN 107 in the morning. I'm Mark Carmen. She is Rachel Woodall. Rachel, you're 2 hours into your first show on WGN. You want to give yourself a grade?
Do I want to give myself a grade?
Yes. How do you think you're doing?
I
think you're doing great.
I think the show's going wonderfully. So how about I grade the show?
Okay. You can do that.
A plus.
Okay. That's a tall grade. We're gonna keep it going on the A+ level here. Barb Burgess, who's the chief operating officer for the Wright Foundation, is in our studio. And Barb is a superstar as far as understanding people. So this is a rare
too much pressure, Mark.
No, you can handle it. So this is a rare opportunity to get some little professional coaching. We'll put it that way. Right now on WGN. Now, you guys, Bob Wright, Judith Wright, who are the leaders of the Wright Foundation. They created the CARE profile.
Mm-hmm.
CARE, which is spelled CARE. Thank you.
We're off to a really good start.
Wow,
I'm psyched.
I went
spelling
to the,
check.
I went to the University of Iowa, 1996, psychology degree. I learned how to spell. So the CARE profile, C stands for cooperator.
Yeah.
A stands for analyzer. R stands for regulator. E stands for energizer. Now, why is this important, Barb, before we go any further? Why was this created? Why am I holding this book, The CARE Profile, in front of me? What was the genesis? What is the idea? Why is this something that can help people in their lives?
Well, there are a ton of personality style assessments and tests that are out there. So this is not, you know, that's been studied for many, many years. But, you know, the whole point is, how do we get along better with people? That's the reality. And, you know, you promised people making tons of money out of doing it. I don't know about that. But to know ourselves and to know other people can help. Kind of comes in handy. It's the stuff we don't learn in school, right? So your major you're using, I was a French major from Iowa, nonetheless. And
go Hawks.
I'm not doing any bonjour, but still, you know. But the things we should learn is, how do we get along with people? You know, what are the things we get in trouble about? And, you know, it works fabulously in relationships and work and everything else.
So you came in here and you told us what we were, and I've never met you. How did you do that?
Because, I was listening to you.
Yeah, I read the article that he sent me, you know, the other day about this, and I was thinking, yeah, I think I have a lot of energizer and then a little bit of cooperator, and that's exactly what you said.
Oh, I was totally guessing. So there was my whole scientific assessment. But when you're looking at what style you are, the first thing you're looking at is, am I more on the, you know, kind of thinking or feeling side?
Mm-hmm.
And am I on the more, you know, outgoing or introverted side? And I'm thinking you're both in radio. You got to have a little bit of that outgoing, although there's probably a little introvert there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But also just sort of your upbeat personality, that kind of stuff, is not an analyzer, definitely. And a regulator would just be saying, let's just get the thing done, and wouldn't really care about it. But you're having conversation, you're chatty, you're being warm with people, etc. So that was my guess, although it could be totally wrong.
Well, that was my guess too, so.
Okay.
And I think what's important to know here, one corner is better than another, right? Analyzers
right.
are not better than energizers.
Energizer number one.
Well, right. I feel the same way.
Except for Rachel and Mark.
Well, I felt Rachel.
They're
like, yes!
The best.
Because energizers definitely like feel like we're the best because we're energizers.
Right.
And the rest of you are lame because you have no energy.
Right. You and the regulators think you dominate, but we cooperators and our friends, the analyzers, might disagree with you.
So it
really is important that there is no right style. I mean, that's the bottom line. And I think that's part of where we get into trouble, is we can't understand why everybody doesn't think like I think. And so we want everybody to act like I act, and then we get all confused when they don't, and then we get in stupid fights and arguments and disagreements at work and in our relationships because we think everybody's going to be like us, and they're not. And the point is, they're all valuable styles, they're all useful in different situations, and we all need to know how to do all of them.
So okay, let's take me and let's make me,
you know, I've been waiting for this moment.
Well,
let's go.
Okay, I mean, I'm excited to get your feedback here. So let's just say I think I'm an energizer, but sometimes I feel like I'm a cooperator because I like to get along, and I don't necessarily want to say like the deep dark thoughts that are in my mind about how you could do the XYZ better or whatever it would be.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, perhaps with my family or on in my dating life. If somebody says something that I don't agree with, I don't necessarily like bust out a ton of energy and say, "You're wrong, I disagree with you." I'll just kind of more nod my head and say, "Well, okay," and maybe I'll make like some like subtle adjustment to it.
Right.
So how if I'm like, I was on a first date tonight.
Yeah.
And she walks in and she's quiet. And can already tell that she's kind of sizing up the scene. I'm thinking to myself, you are an analyzer all day long. And here I'm this energizer guy who,
right.
You know, she's probably read 17 books and I haven't read a book in 17 years. So now how do I get along and connect and like create a bond with somebody who, yeah, we might be different, but there also could be a nice, you know, meeting of the minds there.
Totally. Well, I think the first thing to do is do what you did, which is you kind of do your best guess at what style she is, right? So rather than expecting her to be like you, you don't have to judge her just because she's all quiet and she might be analyzing and maybe she has more academic, you know, vigor, but to really look at how can you meet her where she is. So she's not going to come out all bubbly and make you feel good about yourself. She's going to be more quiet and soft-spoken, and she's going to be sitting back a little bit. So the question is, can you meet her where she is and know that that's okay? And analyzers like data. So can you give them data? You know, can you help her feel grounded about herself and being there and things that way and kind of meet at her pace? She's not going to go fast in the relationship or the conversation, right? That's... So is it okay and can you meet her where she was rather than being like, why isn't she affirming me? I'm great. Why isn't she telling me that yet?
That
hypothetically, Mark, of course.
That was definitely your thought.
No, I was going to say that. I like that. Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. Oh, I'm getting nothing here.
Right. You know, I'm a little curious. We can understand a lot of this stuff very, very well. You could teach someone how to maybe analyze and pick up what traits people have.
Mm-hmm.
How do you teach someone how to enact that knowledge, how to actually use that knowledge in the moment? Say it's a conflict, say it's something where it's really hard to go beyond what's emotionally coming to your mind and mm-hmm. actually focus on something a little bit beyond that.
That's an excellent question. So, I mean, the first thing is, you know, huge disclaimer, you don't want to be fake. So there's nothing worse than teaching a formula about, let me now say this phrase in this way. I mean, yes, that data are helpful, but you really want to be genuine about it. So the point is you really want to meet somewhere where they're at. But if you do and you can understand their style, then you can do a lot of things that are very practical. So, for example, I have two different co-founders of our foundation, and their styles are totally different. One of my bosses is a regulator. He's hard-hitting. It's right between your eyes. And my other boss is more of an energizer. And so I learned very hard when I first started working there that I had to adapt to the two different styles. So my boss, who's the regulator and is hitting you right between the eyes, you know, I'm sending him all these emails. I'm providing way too much data. I'm doing it in my style. And he finally comes out to me and he's like, cut it out. Just get it done. You know, just right in my face. And I was like, okay, got it. And once I learned about how the styles were, I totally talked to him differently. I speak in bullet points. My emails are in bullet points. I have 3-minute conversations with him that are totally bottom lined as we're walking down the hall. Now, that wouldn't be where I'd come from normally. And then it's not where I meet my other boss who wants to know the background. What are people thinking? How are they feeling, et cetera? So it really is a muscle to exercise. But just being able to approach those two different people in a different way, I can be more successful with the exact same agenda.
So, okay. In the scenario where you want to give more data, he wants bullet points.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel satisfied in that situation? I know that he's your boss, and your goal is to make him feel good, and all that type of stuff. But like for yourself, where you're like, you know, you still want to feel good in your work day, right? So how does that whole thing come together?
Well, if I need data from a regulator, I'm going to ask for data in a bullet pointed way with what they want in mind. So I would hit it very hard and direct. So I know you want this. I know this matters to you in the company. So you want to know this. Can I get this data? Boom. That fast. And then he's going to respond. He gets it. I'm going right to the point of what matters to him, and I'll get the data I need.
Interesting. Craig, did that answer your question?
Yeah, no, I like that answer a lot. Yeah. Makes sense.
What are you, Craig?
I'm not sure. I think I might be at times all of them, but that's a good way to approach things, right? It depends on the people, and you reflect back to them in a way that maybe benefits both of you.
I think you're an energizer analyzer. Is that possible?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I keep looking at this very nice table in the care profile book, mm-hmm. and I think I'm relating more to most of the cooperator things.
Yeah, well, that's what I was wondering for both of you as a secondary cooperator, you know, because I don't know why.
Sincerity, loyalty, cooperation, tell me how you feel. I like to, can you explain the primary questions?
Yeah, so there's different things you want to know when you're kind of assessing somebody. So in the, you know, from the person, well, I'm going to go back to your first statement. Everybody has a primary style and a secondary style. So, and nobody is 100% anything. That's just the reality. Like, everybody lives on a spectrum. And certain times you'll find certain situations you might, you know, adjust what your style is depending. So I'm a hard-on cooperator, but if there's no regulator in the room, I'm going to move into my regulator to drive an agenda because it will drive me nuts that nothing's getting down.
Right.
You know, but in the questions piece, it's really like, how can you assess? What are the different things you can look at? You know, does somebody orient to thinking versus feeling? Are they orienting more to task completion? Are they, you know, what are the main primary things that you can assess, you know, do they speak quickly? Do they speak in bottom line bullet points? Do they give a lot of conversation around it? They're just quick ways you can assess. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of different personality styles out there. Why I like this one is just simple. You know, it was actually translated for the beauty industry. Dr. Bob created a whole thing so that a stylist could have somebody in their chair and quickly assess what their style is in order to be able to serve them best while they're cutting their hair.
That's great.
Yeah.
So with these different profiles, there's talk about what's the best job fit for your personality, and you said, of course, you guys are energizers, you're radio hosts. What are some quick, I guess, bullet point jobs that other personality types?
Sure. I'll say a little to that and also say, obviously, huge disclaimer. Like, you can have a great salesperson that's totally an analyzer. They just sell differently. But you will find, like, more of your CEO, high-level driving executives are going to be in the regulator space. People in IT and data analysis, I did a training of this for a company that was a whole data department. And it was the first time I did the training where two-thirds of the room were analyzers, you know? And then there were a couple others sprinkled in. You know, the cooperators, if you're in customer service, is a typical field because you like people, you want to get along, or HR are typical fields for them. So that, you know, they can fall differently, but, you know, kind of makes sense that your personality probably matches it. So
now that makes me think that I'm an energizer regulator, because I could customer service. No chance.
Like, well, that could also be analyzer in your back. So analyzer and regulator, they're not so high on the feeling or the relationship size. So you could be, it could be either way.
Yeah,
there.
But I care, Barb. I've
well, I'm thinking about cooperators caring what other people think.
Yes.
Oh, and I hate getting yelled at, you know, in customer service.
You're definitely
situations.
Not a regulator. How about you, Mark? Do you care what other people think?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. But it depends on the circumstance. Like, when I was the worst waiter ever at the Cheesecake Factory for 3 weeks, I mean,
oh my gosh.
I couldn't. Can I get some extra ranch? No, you cannot.
We still like you.
I didn't care. I couldn't care less what you thought of me. I was like, just get me out of here.
Right.
But now if it's a woman who I'm attracted to, now I care.
Right.
Which is. Did I just say that on the radio?
I did.
What does the care profile say about relationship compatibility, like romantic compatibility?
Ooh. Well, so I will say you can be any style match with any style. The whole point of it is getting to know what your style is so you know what you're going to run into. And this perfect example for me and my husband now, but we were dating at the time, we did this workshop. And it was so eye-opening. Like, all these light bulbs popped for me because, so I'm a cooperator energizer, and he's a regulator analyzer. We're literally polar opposites on the entire system. And so all of a sudden, it made a whole lot of sense to me because the things I cared about, he didn't, and vice versa. So the way he would show love, as it were, to me was he would get stuff done around the house. And that's how he showed love. I'm a cooperator. I want you to tell me you love me. You know, and so what I would do for him is I would be telling him all the time how much I love him, and then he'd be annoyed because I'm not getting tasks done, so he feels like I don't love him because that's how he shows love. So it was just this whole thing where all of a sudden I'm like, oh, this is it. We actually love each other. We just show it totally differently, you know, or all these cyclical fights we'd get in all the time. So from that perspective, it is the awareness. Now, the good thing is if you can pay attention to it, and I could understand he's not just being a jerk, and I'm not just, you know, lazy, then we could actually team really well. So now that we have these opposite styles, we're great at partnering. Like, if you're going to go on a vacation, we're going to take, you know, go somewhere. I'm going to look online. I'm going to look at VRBO.com and, like, imagine myself in these different spaces. How will I feel? You know, I'm doing the whole cooperator, energizer experience thing. He doesn't care. I narrow it down to, like, you know, 5 or 6 that are good with me. And he's like, we're booking this one. And then he gets it done. You know, so it's like beautiful if you can cover the whole thing. But if I was wanting him to love the experience I'm loving, he would just be so annoyed. And vice versa, when he's like, just book it, I would be annoyed too.
I am curious too, if say your one trait very high, like you're a cooperator or something like that, but you'd actually prefer to be something else. Is there a way that you can kind of train yourself to be more of a regulator, even if naturally you are something different? Is there any way to do that?
Completely. And it's totally practice. I mean, I think, and this is the cool thing about all the research they're finding out now about brain plasticity, is like, you're not stuck in anything. We so are raised thinking you're stuck the way you are. So, you know, I was raised and I was a shy kid. My husband was shy. I took my son as a baby to this, you know, Mommy and Me music class. And all of a sudden he's sitting on my lap, nodding and interacting with the kids. And I'm getting frustrated. And my boss says to me, "What, you expected to like pop out this child?" And he'd be like shaking hands and, you know, totally energizing, even though neither of you are. But yes, I kind of thought that. But the cool thing is we can work on it. And so that's the thing we talk about in our family, is like, no, we're always practicing. So I'm an introvert who's practicing being an extrovert. You know, it's like any style you can get into. You know, I'm the COO of my company right now. If you ever told me I would have been in that position with my cooperator personality style 15 years ago, I would have said you were absolutely nuts. But I've worked my muscle like crazy to the point where if my staff assessed me when they first met me right now, I don't think they'd ever guess what my personality style is.
And you're up in front of people all the time. And
yeah.
You're basically, I mean, when you're up in front of people, you're really an energizer.
Yes, right.
You're trying to get people to engage, which we'll come back in 1 second here to talk about more what you do with the Right Foundation and some opportunities out there for you if you're looking to make a move in your life. 312-981-7200. It's 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Great to have Barb Burgess, the Chief Operating Officer of the Right Foundation, with us in studio. I'm Mark Carman. You are Rachel Woodall.
Yes,
you are hopefully having a great holiday weekend. Barb, you're heading out of town, right?
I am.
Good for you. Where are you headed?
Wisconsin, Madison area, Sauk City.
That's amazing. And Rachel, what are you doing for your holiday 4th before we get back into this? I want to know.
My best friend has a parade every year, and every year the Crystal Lake Parade is exactly the same, but she lives on the parade route, so we go there and we eat too much food and watch the parade.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so Barb, you spent 20 years at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange?
No. I've been at the foundation for 15 years.
Okay.
Yeah, I was at the Merck before that.
How long were you at the Merck?
Just over a year.
Okay. Yeah. So what, for those who are just listening, have never heard of the Right Foundation, how would you describe it to people?
Well, we're a nonprofit, a 501c3, and our focus is really on helping people teach all those skills that we should have learned in school and we didn't. You know, the social emotional intelligence is the sort of category that everybody calls it, but it's really, how do you bring out the best in yourselves? How do you have the best life you can have, whether it's professionally, personally, everything? So we look at it holistically, and we do that in a lot of different ways. We have a graduate university that's accredited, we have non-credit courses, and we take it into businesses too.
And you guys have, for those people who are just trying to perhaps make a move in their life, maybe understand themselves better, maybe change their career or work on their relationships, you guys have weekend trainings that are free and available. Is that correct?
Yep, we do a weekend training called the Foundations Weekend Training, and you can come check it out and see what the courses are like and get a little sample of that. And we also do coaching for somebody who isn't quite sure what the first step is to take, but they just want to talk to somebody. We have coaches at all different levels, too.
And how often are these foundation weekends?
5 times a year. Next one's in September.
Okay. And it's a whole weekend thing?
Whole weekend. Friday night, Saturday, Sunday.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Rachel, you going?
Maybe. It sounds awesome. There. You got to remind me, like,
absolutely,
at the end of August.
Craig, you in?
Yeah, sounds great.
All right.
Do you know what we just asked you?
Yes, I do, and I'm going to this conference thingy.
Craig, I see a ton of fear in there, and perhaps some...
No, it sounds really lovely. I want to dive into me.
Roger, you want to dive into you and come to a foundations training?
I'll dive into anything.
There you go.
Amen.
There you go. There
you
go.
The whole WGN crew in September.
That would be an incredibly, incredibly cool experience for all of the WGN people that would sign up. How do people who actually do want to do it, how would they get there?
They go to foundationsweekendtraining.com. And all the information's right there.
All right. Very cool. Will the care profile be covered in the Foundations Weekend Training?
We do. In fact, you do a short assessment of yourself before you even start the training, so you can kind of know what your style is and the style of other people, and we talk about it throughout the weekend.
Interesting. And yeah, we were talking during the break, Rachel, we were asking you what your boyfriend was of his profile, and you were not exactly 100% certain.
I'm not sure, but I would like both of us to take it and see, and we can, like, you know, spruce up our communication styles.
Yeah.
What about the, if I may, before you go here, Barb, I could like to talk to you until about 5 in the morning about this stuff. But for those of us who are in relation, right, mm-hmm, and then there's a little rift, and the natural inkling is to either A, not talk about it, or B, not go all the way in there when talking about it. What is the... I don't know. How do you coach somebody like that,
right,
to engage further so they will get more, let's put it, nourishment from their relationship. What would you say?
Well, I'll say just for example, that person would have been me, as we were sharing at the break, because my husband and I used to get in disagreements, and literally he would have to chase me around our condo, our apartment. And, you know, even to the point where one time I, you know, ran outside and hid next to the house. So I can relate to the person who might want to avoid hypothetically that conflict. But the cool thing is you work this muscle over time and you can practice. But we, when we're teaching about it, we talk about something called approaching. You always want to kind of be leaning into situations, approaching the situation versus avoiding it. Because, you know, habitually we all want to avoid conflict, difficult situations, et cetera. But, you know, if you really want a relationship to work, that never is the formula, right? And as uncomfortable it is, you have to practice it. It's just like a muscle. Like we work out in the gym, we got to work out hanging in there and working through stuff, and most of us aren't used to that.
What if you have two avoiders? That happens all the time.
It does happen all the time, yeah, because they get, well, they get attracted to each other because it's safe, right? It feels safe and comfortable. For me and my husband, the thing we were most proud of that we used to brag like crazy is that we don't fight. And we thought that was like the best thing in our relationship, and it was the worst thing. So basically, one of us had to take the lead and start taking the initiative. And in certain areas, I took it, and in certain areas, my husband took it, but we had to sort of name it and bring it to the table. Otherwise, yeah, you'll, you know, coast on for 30 years and then maybe get divorced.
Quick question. Did you hear Craig's story earlier about the girl who didn't let him break up with her?
Oh, no.
Oh, no, but I think we have to hear it again, don't we?
I think we do.
Just that,
I'm pretty sure she invited her parents to the dinner that I tried to break up with her the third time. I'm pretty sure she brought them herself.
This is a good one. One more time, please.
One more time.
So
okay.
I she was a coworker of mine when I worked at the Meijer, a grocery store, and I tried to break up with her one day, and she didn't seem to fully get it, and I tried to be really nice about it, like, I really like you, but it's just not a good time for me. The next day she came in, kissed me on the cheek, treated me like everything was fine. So we had lunch again during a break, and I broke up with her again, I thought. But again, it didn't take. So I decided to take her out to a restaurant and do it, like, for real, out in public in the real world. And I might have had a plan to be a little bit meaner. Her parents walk in right toward the start of it. They sit down. We're all sharing a meal. I just soldier through anyway and broke up with her pretty violently in front of said
with
parents.
With her folks.
Yeah, then I went to the restroom, regretted everything that had happened and didn't know what to do, so I climbed out a window and left the restaurant.
So you're both avoiders.
Yeah, so it's a double avoider. So, I mean, a couple thoughts about that. One is, if she was doing it intentionally, she might be more on the avoiding side. Right?
I think she was.
You think she was doing it intentionally?
I think she's definitely on the avoiding side.
Or otherwise, you might need to work on your communication, be more direct. Because three times of not getting it,
Craig.
I gotta wonder on that
it's,
one.
It's hard when somebody starts to get sad. You know, you want to say positive things, right? You want to
No. Okay. You gotta suck it up.
All right.
You gotta be straight.
Okay. Well. Okay.
We still like you.
We're gonna go to the news in a second, Roger. I apologize, but there's a lot of people out there that they end up staying in relationships forever.
Yes.
Because they won't say, they're too afraid to get out.
Right. And I mean, I think that's the case. You know, we're talking about this recently, but people look at the success of the relationship is about your number of years you've been together as if that's the main thing. But do you have a thriving, growing relationship? Can you kick the tires? If it's something you have to be so careful in or it falls apart, it's not much of a relationship. And
right.
I think that's the thing for all of us that I had to learn earlier on is you got to be willing to kick the tires. And yes, you have to be willing to lose somebody if that's the case. But if it's really going to last over time, I mean, life deals us a lot of stuff. And if it's going to be resilient, we got to be willing to do that and see what happens.
Kick the tires.
Kicking the tires is the best thing that can happen to a relationship.
Well, the whole point, they say engagement, right?
Experience.
Engagement, you're supposed to engage. And instead, people get engaged and they totally play it safe. They don't upset the apple cart because they're so afraid what's going to happen.
You got to engage. All right, Craig.
This is the news.
Craig's got more questions. You want to stay for one more segment?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll do one more segment. Roger.
Yo.
Sorry, Roger.
Hi.
1:33. We're 3 minutes late for you, but that doesn't mean we don't love you. WGN. Hope you're having a great start to your 4th of July weekend. I'm Mark Harmon. She's Rachel Woodall. We got about 23 minutes to go here, and then I know. I always feel that way. And then it's Kevin Richter and Michael Heidemann making their debut. They're in for Matt Bubala. 2 a.m., which is an outstanding shift that I have worked many times and really enjoyed. Bob Burgess is in the studio, the chief operating officer for the Wright Foundation. Craig said that he's got a bunch more questions. If you want to jump in here, you feel free. 312-981-7200. We're talking a lot about relationships right now. So if you're having an issue with your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, and you want Barb's analysis, feel free. 312-981-7200. Or if you're interested in the care profile, that's out there for you too. Craig has a question. Craig Collins, who's...
We were talking a lot about conflict and about dealing with conflict and trying not to avoid it. And it kind of made me think a lot about the inverse kind of approach that people might take, or the inverse scenario where maybe someone is focusing too much on negative things. Is there a way that you kind of talk to someone or deal with that when maybe fights are happening all the time and they're not all necessary, or maybe there's, you know, a negative thing that doesn't seem to be going away when maybe there could have been a resolution at some point?
Well, yeah, that's an excellent question. I think the point about fighting is you have to learn how to fight well, right? Because at first, if you're not fighting, you have to practice fighting. But then a lot of times it's irresponsible fighting. So the question is, how do you get good at the skills so that you can work through a fight? If you're in fights that aren't getting resolved, that's not solid fighting and you need more practice. And again, I'll harken back to me and my husband. So when we first started fighting, it was like, I mean, for me, it was like I hadn't been fighting, and all of a sudden I was a bull seeing red. You know, it's just like I would be charging over him and whatever. And we had to practice in the middle of a fight, me saying, acknowledging he was right about something. So he'd say something in the middle of the fight that was totally right, like, well, you did this. And I would do that, yeah, but. You know, and we got coached that yeah, but wipes away anything you said before that. It just literally obliterates it. So I had to just stand there and go, yes, you are right. And I had to practice shutting up. You know, so that then he had a little space to say something. But that's something you practice in the relationship, right? At the beginning, you don't have that kind of skill. So if it literally is negative all the time and you're running around and around, that's not productive fighting. That's just being in drama.
I'm watching Craig behind you. He's just
laughing. I'm nodding. I am understanding.
He's nodding and laughing.
I can't see him. He's behind me.
Yeah. I am also curious if, do you find anybody that has this problem with maybe finishing someone else's sentences? I know a lot of conversations, a lot of emotional conversations, you need to express yourself and you don't want someone else to express what you're feeling. But if they express it correctly, do you ever find someone that really struggles with preventing themselves from saying what they think someone else is saying? Does this make sense as a question?
Yeah, well, you have two things going on there, so I'm just going to name that. So from a female and male perspective...
Got it. Okay, good.
Women tend to finish each other's sentences and we talk over each other, and it's actually a sign that we're bonding and it's something we do. For a man, and I'm not 100% here, but it's because you're on that masculine feminine ratio, but more for men, if you interrupt or finish a sentence, it's actually a sign of hostility and it's a threat. So it's something that, like, as women, we have to be conscious of when we're doing, because we're actually annoying you. And I had to watch this because I would do, you know, marketing calls on the phone. And if I was talking to a man and I wasn't face to face with them, all of a sudden I'd be interrupting him to show that I agree. And actually, I'm showing the opposite by my interruption. So there's that male-female dynamic you have to pay attention to. And then there could be just a thing where somebody's really not giving you the space or listening to you. So there's two different things that could be going on there.
You just explained so much.
Yeah, I need it again, to be honest. I'll listen back on the podcast. So that's.
I didn't know that was a gender thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's not 100%, but by and large, you'll notice that women, that's how we build rapport with each other. We're going to talk all over each other, and it's all good, and men don't.
Right. That's why I do that. And then I feel really guilty if I'm talking to someone who doesn't feel the same way.
Yes. And then they get annoyed and they give you that look.
The only thing I heard there as I was looking there with the reactions of Craig and Rachel and managing the whole situation and not being present, that's what I was doing, was that if a male finishes the sentence for a woman, we're being, that's hostile gesture?
No, I'm just saying by and large, women would tend to do it more, right?
Men interpret it as hostility as opposed to bonding, and women seem to think of it as bonding.
Oh, okay. So if you finish my sentence, it's
hostile. If I was just about to do that, like I just did, I just interrupted you, and then you'd be really annoyed because I kept doing it.
Yeah, that's really hostile.
See, and if you saw him, you could see Mark getting angry, you know, frustrated.
But since we were agreeing, we like each other more now.
Right. We all bonded. Well, you were getting ticked off.
I'm feeling it. 312-981-7200, the number here at 720 WGN. So, okay.
We do have a quick text, and I'm not sure if this is a legitimate question or not, but you can try to field it from the 773. What if your boss is just in, you know, a...
Fill in the blank.
Yeah. What if your boss is just a really horrible person, is what they're saying. There's no redeeming qualities. There's no anything. How do you deal with someone that's just crappy?
Well, you have a couple sorts to do. So first of all, when we're coaching people, it's, have you really taken responsibility for the situation? So, You know, I'm always hesitant a little bit when somebody says, no, my boss is 100% crappy. Everybody has some percentage of crappiness, some of their style we don't like more than others. So the first place we go to is, have you done everything you can? If you have, then you've got a sort to do. Are you going to stay there and work it out? Are you going to do your best job and, you know, risk putting your job on the line? Or should you be going elsewhere? You know, but those are usually later conversations to have once you've really seen what you could do to take responsibility for it. Because sometimes it is just a style issue. I was just teaching this workshop a couple weeks ago, and this woman who was so annoyed by her boss, but her boss is a polar opposite style that she is. And now she's like, okay, I can understand that he's not just a jerk. That's his style, right? So you have to sort it out. But if it is the case, then it's a bigger conversation. I'd have to know more details to know what to advise.
What's the standard thing that you see in couples counseling? Like people are, I would assume that they're coming for couples counseling. They're at the very last legs. They don't want to get divorced, but yet they don't know a way through. I mean, does that sound about right?
I mean, I think that's true for most couples. I think most couples think about, oh, let's go get help if there's a problem. You know, personally, we like working with people on the other end of it. So some of the people that have been the most successful with our coaching, they started when they got engaged. Because really, you want to learn these skills early on and not come when you've already given up, right? You want to sort of flip on the up. When you're on the upside of your relationship is when you kick the tires. You know, don't wait 25 years later in your empty nest and all of a sudden you're staring across at the other person going, we have nothing in common. But I think that is common, which is people wait until things are bad rather than learning the skills up front to do well in the relationships.
See, and I think a lot of young people, and I'm speaking from some form of experience here, that they look at it like, if I'm going to go get couples counseling before I get married, well, what's, and their parents are almost coming at them like, well, what's wrong with things? Why are you doing that?
Yeah, and I think it's one of the biggest mistakes and common misconceptions, because you think about it. I mean, you know, we spend all this time on this wedding. Like, this wedding is the whole thing. The wedding has nothing to do with getting married. My husband and I didn't really get married into years into our relationship, right? We did the event. Everybody showed up. But it was like we were roommates living in the same house. We had no clue how to be married. And I think that's the mistake, is like, you have to learn how to do that. How do you partner with somebody? We moved in. We shared everything. But it was irrelevant. It wasn't until we really learned to get engaged with each other, to dig into stuff, that we became a couple. And so, yes, people do look at it that way. And I wish it was the opposite.
Just in time for wedding season.
And for those of us who just got completely terrified by that,
well, and this
raise
loving,
your hand.
This loving text as well from the 630. Forget women. There's nothing. They're nothing but a headache. I'm marrying my job in 2016.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, what about me?
What about you, Roger?
40 years.
What did you do well, Roger? Tell us.
I have no clue.
You kicked all of the tires.
Yeah.
I think the tires kicked me.
Which is great. Yeah.
I don't know what the secret is. It's not been perfect. I don't think there's any perfect marriage. Anyone who says they never fight are lying.
Yep.
Or sure. We're human beings. My goodness gracious, we have faults galore. Everyone in the world does.
Yep.
And when you get two faults together, it's going to be a earthquake from time to time.
Here's another question for you, Barb. I think a lot of men out there, unconsciously, they end up actually trying to date their mother.
Oh,
yikes!
I know. Is that?
We're digging in now, aren't we?
This is love
now. No, we just went Freud.
Am I right or am I wrong?
I will say from. I'm just going to go back to my perspective, because somebody made this observation about me, and they were saying how, you know, my husband was more analytical as my dad was, and he worked in the same actual kind of trade industry. And it was one of those things where I hadn't looked at that. So yeah, unconsciously at a level, we're all trying to get needs met. And so unconsciously, we're still little kids trying to get these needs met by our parents that we didn't when we were little. So that happens in the dynamic, and you can either kind of pay attention to it, look how it plays out, or, you know, you kind of run around unconsciously.
And I should have said that on both sides, that the women are looking for their
dad.
Yeah,
same thing.
Rachel, I saw a bunch of reactions over there by you. I certainly saw smiles and thoughts and whatnot. Feel free to share.
Oh, you know, it's just interesting. It's just an interesting thing when I hear that.
Yes, it is.
I don't know. I don't have anything to say on the matter.
Okay.
So, but you know what I do want to say in regards to Roger's topic is, I was talking about my grandfather earlier, and just to bring him up one more time, because he was an amazing dude. He and my grandma were married for 61 years.
Wow.
And one of the things that they told me just kind of in passing was, I was visiting and it was morning, and my grandpa was really sick, but my grandma came over and, you know, gave him a kiss, and she said, just make sure that you marry someone that you always want to kiss in the morning.
That's beautiful. I don't know if it's realistic, but it's beautiful.
Going to get all sad. But
don't tell my husband that, but okay. Yeah, no. But eventually.
All right.
Well, and I just want to say one other thing to the 40 years. I think one of the things that was a blessing in my relationship is that my husband and I both knew we were going to work on it. To your point, Roger, is like, whether you know you're going to kick the tires or not, life kicks you one way or another. And so if you have that mindset that the relationship is something you're going to work on and you're going to work through stuff, then that is helpful. If you think it's all going to be perfect and when you fall out of love, it's a problem, then you're never going to be in anything long term because we all fall out of love. The chemistry fades, all that other stuff, you know. Does, and then you reinvigorate it. You choose to, you know, work on it so that it's more exciting. I honestly can say I fall in love with my husband more and more every year. I mean, that is just a fact, but it's because we work our butts off at it, you know, and I think that's part of the beauty of it.
That's so awesome.
I think you bring up a couple of things. One, love is an emotion. You work at a marriage. A marriage is a union. It's a thing, and the emotions can come from that relationship. The emotion of love comes from that interaction. And like you said, you love them more and more every year. Well, because you're working on that connection. You're working on that marriage. And the things that you do that you accomplish together help you love each other more.
Right, absolutely. And I can hate him more than I hate anybody because we're so close, right?
Right.
I know all his buttons. He knows all my buttons. So that's part of the mixture. But as much as I can be honest about me hating him is as much as I can love him and get close to him. So, absolutely.
Barb, great stuff.
Yeah, thank you so
Everybody
much.
Everybody should
thank
go to
you.
foundationweekendtraining.com if you'd like to get some free coaching and just have a cool experience for a weekend. And that is available to you. When's the next one? September what?
September 10th to the 12th.
There you go. September 10th to the 12th. Right there for you. Rachel and I will be there to coach you through it.
I actually do want to go.
Great. So. Love to have you.
All right. Sweet. Barb, have a great 4th, and thanks for coming
Thank you. Same to both of you.
It's Barb Burgess, Chief Operating Officer of the Wright Foundation, WrightLiving.com. Check it out. And this is 720 WGN.